Dear listeners, Sai Ram and greetings from Prashanthi Nilayam. Welcome to our radio program, Afternoon Satsang. This is a segment of Radio Sai's Thursday Live, hosted by Prem and Arvind from Team Radio Sai at 12:30 p.m. Indian Standard Time on Thursdays, only on Asia Stream of Radio Sai Global Harmony. Today's episode was first broadcast live on 2nd April 2015. Have a listen, please.
Sairam, dear listeners, and greetings to you from the spiritual capital of this universe, Prashanthi Nilayam in Puttaparthi. And it is our great pleasure to have this satsang in such beautiful precincts. The prayer goes, Asatoma Satgamaya, Tamasoma Jyotirgamaya, Mrityorma Amritangamaya. We often turn to the Lord in those situations where we feel that nothing we do can ever help. And therefore, three such situations where only God seems to have the ability to help is when we turn to God. And this prayer that I just now repeated is something that is chanted at the beginning of every prayer session in the university, in the educational institutions, and almost all the institutions set up by Bhagwan, where one seeks from the Supreme to lead him from untruth to truth, from darkness to light, and from death to immortality. This particular prayer, Asatoma Satgamaya, Tamasoma Jyotirgamaya, Mrityorma Amritangamaya, holds special relevance today as we offer our prostrations at the lotus feet of our beloved Swami, who is present in every satsang, because it has a lot to do with the theme of today's satsang, which I'm sure will be introduced to us by Brother Prem. Before that, let me welcome Brother Prem. Sai Ram Prem.
And as you said, today's is a very profound topic, to say the least. And definitely we need Swami's blessings to be able to take up this topic, because we're talking about something which is definitely not within the grasp of any of our understanding, because that is one aspect which, if you know, you're not here to know in that sense. But talking about the topic, you know, we can talk about the various things that constitute life, our everyday experience, our everyday living. We're talking about values. We talk about how to deal with situations in everyday life. But this is something which is universal. Everybody faces it at some point or the other. But most often we are caught unawares. And that is the end to life. And we all, especially as human beings, are living in a society where we so closely bond with each other. And apart from the family structure, which is understandable, where you have children and you have grandchildren, brothers and sisters, we also live in a community where we depend so much on our neighbors, we depend so much on the people whom we interact with on a daily basis. So a sudden, abrupt end to any of these characters in the drama of our life can be a little unsettling most times. And today, dear listeners, what we're going to try to do is, what do you do in such situations? What is expected of us as Swami's devotees is what we're going to try to do, because our solace, as always, is Swami's message and Swami's guidance. And is there something which we can dig out from there and use for situations such as these?
If I may add to something that you said, Prem, you said it takes us by shock when something comes suddenly. Now, death is such a thing that it takes us by shock even if it comes gradually.
Right.
You know, it doesn't depend on its suddenness. You know someone who is dear to you, who is sick, who has been ailing. It's been a year maybe now. But even then, after a year, if that person goes away, it is definitely painful. That is what happened, right, when it came to even Swami's case. It was critical but stable, stable but critical, all these terms for more than a month. And though many of us mentally feared the worst might happen, when it actually happened, it was in no way easier than if it had happened suddenly. And you know, most of the times people think that time is the best healer. Things will get better just hold on. But the fact of the matter is that whoever said that the loss gets easier with time, I feel is a liar. Because what really happens is the space between the times that you miss somebody who has gone grows longer possibly. But then whenever that person is remembered again, maybe after a greater period of time, maybe after a greater interval, it is still with that same stabbing pain in the heart. So it is not something that time will take away. Now, isn't that the reason actually the sorrow comes? Because time can take away the person from existence in the world. But time is unable to take away the existence of that person in our heart. And that is the cause for the pain in the first place. And so, though it is an oft offered consolation that don't worry, with time it's going to get better, I think we have to be bold and brave enough to face the truth that it is not going to get better. Possibly the space between the sorrow is going to increase. In the beginning, every hour I might be crying and feeling the loss of the person. Then possibly every few days. Because frankly speaking, Prem, I have not yet suffered, touch wood, the loss of anyone without whom I can't imagine life. And the only person that comes close is not actually a person. It's our Bhagwan, the physical frame of Bhagwan. So with that experience I'm speaking, and I'm saying that when that happened, when Bhagwan left the physical, it was an hourly pain, stabbing in the heart, not allowing to sleep. You don't want to eat, you don't want to do anything else. Hourly it keeps coming, minutely it keeps coming possibly. And then, now do I miss him any less? Now is the pain any less? No. It's just that instead of hourly, after some time it started coming, or maybe after 1 or 2 days. After that it became weekly. Now possibly once in a month or once in 2 months, suddenly you remember that the pain, everything is the same, Prem. So it is indeed a lie to say that the loss gets easier. It's just that we don't recollect and go through that pain as frequently. But whenever it comes, that pain is definitely there.
Talking about Swamis is definitely a very different case, but it's a very solid case in point if you ask me. Mm. Because generally the consolation which is often given is, you know, you're not the body, you're not the physical entity. What really you are lives on. And I think there's a famous poem by one of the very famous poets. Mm-hmm. We used to have it even in the lesson, where he writes about a friend whom he has lost and how he consoles himself saying that the body perishes, but it's the soul which lives on. And, you know, invariably our relationship is with that personality which endures, you know, which even exists after that death. Mm-hmm. And having said all this, take the case of Swami. I think all of us were drawn to Swami because of the fact that we knew that he was not the body. I mean, even in our physical and worldly interaction sense, we were absolutely convinced that he was not the body like you and me. He was much more beyond the human frame. We knew it every day of our life we spent with Swami. That was why we came
exactly
to Swami. You know, he was not another friend. He was not another mother or another father like that. He was somebody who was superhuman, who was special, who was beyond that body, because we knew that he existed all places and he was with us. We could come and see him in Parthi, but when we go back homes, he was still with us. We could travel abroad, but he was traveling with us. We knew it, but still, when that body was to be gone for our physical eyes, it hurt. So the fact is, as somebody beautifully says, that if you're dreaming, and in your dream somebody takes a dream hammer and hammers your head, it will still hurt. Though it's a dream,
the pain is real.
The pain is real. The pain is always real when you go through it. So when you talk about the time period which varies, I think that is where the essence is. Because when in an emotional pain, you cannot think. When you're under the stress of an emotional, something which is straining you emotionally, you just cannot think. And that's why they say that, you know, don't make a decision when you're angry or make promises when you're happy. Mm. Because these are both extreme emotions and you cannot make sensible decisions when you're under the sway of these emotions. And when you say with time that the gap between the pain increases, if you have been prepared before, the kind of thinking which will come in this period between the pain is actually which will increase the pain and which will make you live your life in a way that is more sensible after that loss or after that shock which has come your way. And that is what actually is the best way to deal with the problem that you're facing.
From all that has been said, this much can be inferred that situation of a death demands two kinds of responses. One is an immediate emergency response, because as you said, it is in a situation of great emotion and it needs something to remedy. And the other thing that requires is a deeper kind of solution to ensure that such situations don't actually affect us. See, it's like if there's a fire breaking out in the building, right now I won't think of fireproofing the building or what should be done to ensure that it doesn't happen like this. Immediately my thing will be, do anything possible, just shut down this fire because it's burning. That's exactly how it is when someone dear passes away. Right now there's a fire raging within me, do something to put out this fire. So that is one aspect. The other aspect is, now that the fire is put out, what can be salvaged and how can the building be constructed so that the fire doesn't ever burn anything inside again? In case there's a fire also, can there be an automated fire alarm system which goes off and puts on the sprinklers or whatever and puts out that fire? Because I cannot say that a situation, never again there will be fire in the lifetime of the building. Fire can happen anytime, anyway, gradually, suddenly. But can it be prepared? So I think both these aspects we should try to dive into Swami's teaching, Swami's discourses, and see what is there. One on the aspect of firefighting, which is immediately. The other on the aspect of fireproofing, so that future fires don't damage the building as badly as the current fire. And in order to do that, I think we should realize, I mean, this is not something new, that every person is not just one. Swami says you are not one but three. So there are different ways. If we see the koshas, they say there are five, the annamaya, pranamaya, manomaya. But generally for our understanding, we can see that every person is a physical entity, an emotional entity, an intellectual entity, and a spiritual entity.
Right.
Because when we say death, we should examine which part of this entity is gone, which part of the entity is not gone, and there is physical pain, there is emotional trauma, there is a kind of intellectual blankness that comes, and spiritual, let's go to that a little later, but there is effect on each of these levels. So possibly we can try to see what can be the firefighting on all these levels, and then later also think on what can be the fireproofing on all these levels.
Very true. I think maybe to start with, the grossest form is what is to start with physical, you know, many times you would see this when there is that shock event which happens. I think it happened with all of us when it came to Swami too. A silly way of doing it, but unfortunately what appears like the most obvious way of doing it, you want to express that sorrow through pain physically. You know, there are some people who want to harm themselves physically. They want to, because basically it is just that sorrow which seeks a physical expression. You know, that's why it is so much, it is said, you know, psychologically they say, doctors tell you, it is good to cry actually. It's good to cry. And in fact, in the Indian tradition, you, if you go to the village sides, you know, you would have these, if you ever attend a funeral, you will see that these people actually hit their chest and they'll wail out aloud. You know, it looks very dramatic and all that, but it all has a meaning because it is giving you a physical expression for that sorrow within, and it's very dangerous not to express that sorrow or express it in ways which would harm the person who is, you know, undergoing that sorrow. So one way is actually that physical expression of the sorrow, which is not harmful to oneself. And if you can actually bring it to a beneficial way, if it can be an expressed in a way which is beneficial not only to you, but even to the people around you, I think that would be the most ideal way to express that physical sorrow.
Exactly. You know, when it comes to the physical sorrow, what I feel is, as you said, it's great pent up energy within. It has to be expended. And as you said, if it can be put to a positive way, it's great. And I feel that is the reason why, if we see in the Bharatiya tradition, there are these rituals. And these rituals don't end on the day the person right. goes away, or on the day of the burial or the funeral. It extends for 11 days, 13 days, 15 days. The specifics vary, but it is there because, you know, I feel like when they say, I mean, an idle mind is a devil's workshop. When you sit idle, all these thoughts keep coming back again. I was reading that Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle. Mm-hmm. In that he says one very beautiful thing. He says, in the now there is no sorrow. The sorrow is always with thoughts of the past and thoughts of the future. Thoughts of the future bring worry. Thoughts of the past bring sorrow and fear, whatever. And even in the case when we say of a death of a dear one, that is what it is. Whenever I am sorrowful, if we actually examine that, it's always because we are either in the past or in the future. Because we think of what beautiful memories we had with the person, or we travel to the future and think that these memories will not be there anymore.
Right.
So, immediately, to release that energy in the present, the best possible way, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, is action. To ensure that we are doing some action or the other. And the best way is to continue to do our duty. Continue to do our duty in spite of what happens. You know, that is why there are legends of several devotees of Swami. One devotee who was giving a talk in a hall and he was informed that his mother has passed away, went on to complete the talk and then go. Because, you know, when his mother has already passed away, what is it that he can do? So, he continued to do his duty. And when I say continue to do your duty, it doesn't mean only professionally or as a mother or as a wife or as a husband or as a brother. Not that way. Even the duty towards the departed soul. Some people find it tough. Either they think that I won't be able to stand possibly looking at the person when he's gone. But there is a reason why that whole funeral procedure has been set up. It is actually a cathartic process. I remember a lady who had come to Prashanti Nilayam 2 years after Swami left the physical. Mm-hmm. She said that I was visiting Prashanti thrice every year. I asked her then, why didn't you come for 2 years? She says, because I can't stand to look at that marble structure there. I asked her, do you think that 2 years is going to make sure that when you see the marble structure, you don't feel anything, just go and have a look. She was shattered. She was devastated. As you said, it has to have its vent. It's not as if we didn't have our feeling. It was there. Why not vent it and be done with that so that we can proceed ahead? So that is why these duties are there, which I feel the first thing in firefighting that we can do on the physical front is to ensure that to the last detail we do it, whatever tradition it might be. I might be a Jain, I might be a Hindu, I might be a Muslim, I might be a Christian. Each religion or each way to God has its own things to be done. Do all of that with all sincerity, for it serves two purposes. One is it's a cathartic process where it gives a vent, a positive vent to all the emotion that has built up inside. Second thing, it gives us something to do and focus upon so that that is again another vent to the energy and another kind of calming thing to the emotion.
Very true. Not just that immediate rituals, but even the rituals, as you said, on the 13th day, 14th day. One thing is, there might be other subtle reasons why we do it. You know, the talk of the other planes of existence and these beings being pleased there. That is something which we don't know. Other than somebody like Swami who can tell us what is the whole thing, we don't know.
We know it based on faith, that's all.
But even physically, even talking of it practically, see, these are all things where in the memory of the person on that particular day every year, you cook those things which that person likes, or you remember that person. I think these are all very positive ways of expressing that memory instead of locking it up and it becoming a burden. These are all positive ways of expressing that memory. You think of that person, you think fondly of that person and what that person liked, and if you're able to offer it, I mean, eventually all offerings are given to God, but a very positive and sublimating way of doing with these memories. And I think that is why it's very important when you look back at all these rituals. It's all, so much of thought has gone into it. It's not been put without any reason. And definitely it's physically to be able to do those last duties. And that's why they say that this is the last duty you're doing to your mother. This is the last duty you're doing to your father. Because that is a moment which is, it'll be told to you when you're doing it. No? They'll keep telling you that this is the last thing. So that you get that satisfaction that yes, at least I've done this. And that's why it's a very emotional and dramatic thing, especially in Indian tradition, where the mother or the father, the parent always craves for that last duty to be done by her children or, you know, their children. Because it kind of, as you said, physically it is a very calming process, the whole thing. Though it might not appear so at that moment, you might think that it gives you more pain to be in that moment than to be away from it. But actually it's on when you look back, maybe after a few months, few years, you'll be happy that you could do all that had to be done. And as you said, the best way is do your duty of that moment. That's the best expression for the physical pain which you might otherwise face.
You know, Prem, the most painful thing for me when Swami physically left was, it's not as if my pain was any special. I was experiencing the same pain as everybody else. But you know, everybody else had the chance to just sit there in the presence where Swami was placed there and, you know, whatever, give vent to their grief. But, you know, the who's who, the Prime Minister of the nation had come, big superstars from the country, I mean, who are in the news. So many people came to pay their last respects. And being part of Radio Sai, it was part of my duty to go and cover that. And that is the last thing I ever wanted to do. I didn't want to, you know, go and cover the funeral of Swami's physical frame. But that is what exactly I had to do. I had no time for my own grief. And at that time, I really hated it. I don't know how I managed to do it. It was just that I was thinking that Swami, exactly as you said, Swami, this has been the duty that you have given me. Because Swami always told us, you know, he always told us, right, that you do your duty. In fact, when for Swami's 85th birthday, we wanted to do something special. You remember all of us as students went to him and Swami just said, if you want to do something special, just ensure that you do your duty with more sincerity. That's all. Need not do anything extra. That is the emphasis Swami gave on duty, and that's why he said duty is God. So at that moment it was very, very tough. But today when I look back, I feel very, very happy with myself that thank you Swami, thank you, you gave me the strength to do it at that time. So as you said, at that moment, it might seem like a very illogical thing to do. Because how does it matter now? You know, I'm saying this because I've heard people, you know, talk behind, you are not the person who is affected. And then you say, what is the use of draping that person with the silk sari? He's gone. You're simply burning the silk sari. It's not like that. It's not burning the silk sari. It's much more than that. What is the use of making his favorite sweet today? He's gone. He can't enjoy the sweet. It's not that. You won't understand it, and you just stop short of saying when you feel it, when you face this, you will realize what it is. Because that is how it is. All those things have a lot of meaning. And today when I look back, I can definitely feel that on that day, possibly, it was for my own good that I was preoccupied with actually shooting all this and doing my duty. So on a physical plane, doing one's duty and keeping oneself occupied definitely ensures that don't relapse into a negative cycle of expression of this energy that is pent up. Because sorrow, just like joy, is also great energy. See, when we are so happy, we are suddenly able to do so many things. The same way, sorrow is also an energy. And when we look at some of the people whom we talk about today, they have found a method of diverting this energy into something positive. Now, I was reminded of Imran Khan, Pakistani cricketer. He was their captain in 1992. He was about 41 years of age. He was on his way out of cricket. Just for the sake of the World Cup, he decided to play because the country wanted him. It was a bunch of talented cricketers, but with no big game exposure. And in 1992, the World Cup was in Australia. And Pakistan began disastrously. Mm-hmm. They lost out. But that was when something happened, which was a personal disaster for Imran Khan. He lost his mother to cancer. And that is when he decided that cancer is a very disastrous thing. It has taken away my mother. I will ensure that cancer doesn't do this. He decided to build a cancer hospital in the name of his mother. And that was the reason behind him playing the World Cup. And unbelievably, he actually won the World Cup. And just look what a dramatic scene it was. On the big stage, holding aloft the trophy, he announces his retirement from cricket and he says that this money that I'm getting is now going to go to that hospital, and that hospital indeed came up. I feel that's a magical way of using the sorrow, because it's not some random act. It's an act connected. Your mother passed away because of cancer and therefore a cancer hospital. Possibly my son or my daughter or maybe my father was a big cricket enthusiast. Can I go and encourage two children to play cricket and bring them up and see my father or my son or my whatever. My daughter is a Bharatanatyam enthusiast and she passed away suddenly in an accident. Painful. Terribly. I'm not able to bear it. But you know what? Her life. What was her life about? Her life was about Bharatanatyam. So the frame may be gone, but Bharatanatyam can live on. Can I pick up Bharatanatyam? Can I learn? If not me, can I encourage my sister to learn? Or can I encourage some other girl to learn? Can I sponsor a child and see my daughter dancing through that child? Something like that. I feel pursuing the passions, hobbies, interests of the one who has left will give again some more positive vent to this energy. And with that, we will also be creating something that will be of use to life that exists on earth.
Even as you're saying this, I'm just reminded of something which someone had told me sometime back about one of the devotees in, I think, Hyderabad, Swami's devotees, who had an unbelievable disaster in her family where I think she and her entire family, extended family, were traveling towards the airport and they were supposed to leave to US or something, and the rest of them were going to see them off. They're going in two cars and they met with an accident, and except this lady, everybody had, you know, succumbed to that injuries which they sustained in that accident. And you can imagine, at one shot, your whole family is wiped out. You're the only one left standing.
You'll be wondering, why did you leave
me? And you would, I mean, what would you look at your future as, you know, when you look look ahead? What will you look there? I mean, it's all emptiness and darkness. When she was in the hospital, she didn't know that this had happened. And when she came out and she realized that this is what, you know, her whole family was no more, she said, Swami, for some reason you've given me life. You know, you've let all of them perish, but you've given me life. Henceforth, every moment of this life is for you. And she fills her life from morning to day, and so many years have passed, with Swami's activities. You know, I think this is what is a perfect positive expression of the shock which has happened to you in your life. I mean, this, I think, takes a lifetime of preparation. It cannot come at the moment of sorrow. And that is why preparation is very important. Maybe we'll come to that later. But this is what we're saying, that sorrow is instantaneous. If somebody comes and tells you, hey, just forget it, man. After all, everybody has to die one day. I mean, that's not the way. The sorrow is real. I mean, for the person who is sorrowing, the person who is grieving, that grief is real. But if you are able to pull yourself up and make some good use of that grief, I think there's nothing which can be better than that.
Exactly. I mean, I have nothing more to add to that. As I said, personally know of a few people. My own wife, for instance, she was very, very, very close to her grandparents. And when they passed away, it was really traumatic for her. She was shattered. This was the first time she was experiencing death. But you know, as I said, she had never been to the funeral grounds before. But she insisted on being there. I was really scared because, you know, when they burn the body, it'll be a very, very terrible scene actually. When you see the skin melting away and all, she said, no, let me see that. Let it get driven into me. You know, I was really in admiration for her, for having the courage. For she said that this will help me accept it. This will help me accept that my grandfather is truly gone physically. But then, you know, he loved dramatics. He loved to play the harmonium. My wife sings, so she says, I will now start picking up the harmonium. And though she is not interested in the harmonium, she now wants to pick it up, and it is wonderful. It's beautiful. It's a positive vent to that same energy. Another reason, you know, why we should be careful with this energy, of course, is because while we have to vent out this energy, we can't keep it within. You also have to see what impact it has. If I am a child and I've lost my mother, it is one thing. But if I'm a mother of three children and I've lost one child, how will my sorrow affect the other two children? I mean, I should not miss out on what can be done to people I care about just because of what I can't do to people I care about. I'm not able to do something. I've lost my daughter. I've lost my son. But with that grief and sorrow, am I actually making a disastrous influence on the son or daughter who is still left? Or in the same manner, I might have lost my mother and I may have a baby sister, and my reaction, how will it affect the others, especially the elders and youngsters in the house? I saw this happening with, again, Pooja's grandparents, you know. Her grandparents led an amazing healthy life and they were there. It was so wonderful. The grandfather passed away suddenly one morning. I remember going there. He got up from his bed. He came and he asked for water. He lay down and he was gone. After that, you know, the mood at the home, I mean, her mother and her father and even Pooja, the mood came down so much, within 2 to 3 months of that prem, the grandmother also went away. And though we know that death is just like life is destined, death is destined, everything is there, I cannot say that there was no impact of that thing, you know. Suddenly grandmother might have felt that there's no purpose in living anymore, because everything around is morose. So the environment that is created, yeah, of course, one day there's mourning, two days it's mourning, but after some time, we also have to realize that just as we are doing our duties towards the person who has died, we have our duties and responsibilities towards the people who are living also. I'm saying all this on the emotional front. On the emotional front, physically we did that. On the emotional front, two ways of doing it is, one is expressing this energy into the passions and hobbies and the interests and the likes of the person who has gone. At the same time, keeping the same thing for the people who are still around, who are dependent on us, towards whom we have responsibilities. Because while our responsibilities towards that physical frame has ended, our responsibilities towards the other physical frames continue.
And the other thing, if you just look at it, of course, I'm not sure how much of this can be conveyed to a person who's in grief, but if you look at it, especially if I see, you know, what happened with Swami for us, and be it somebody else, see, one thing is, why do you grieve when someone passes away? As we started off with, none of us know what's there on the other side of death. You know, and I remember, it seems one devotee goes and asks Ramana Maharshi, Bhagwan, is there anything like heaven and hell? What happens after death? Is there rebirth? And he, as his typical self, was very calm, and he said, if you believe there is heaven, there is heaven. If you don't believe there is no heaven, there is no heaven. And almost like saying the possibilities after death is infinite. There is nothing like there is a fixed path. In the sense, I'm just saying that we just don't know what is there on the other side of death. And we don't know whether there is happiness on the other side. I think invariably what is depicted is there is light on the other side and there's only happiness after that. But then why do we grieve? We don't know what happens to the person who leaves us. We are all the time grieving because we are thinking about our loss. We're thinking about what we are losing. What change is happening to my life? And the grief is invariably a result of concentrating too much on ourselves. Technically speaking, it because we are thinking of what I've lost, what I'm not going to have anymore, my future is going to be different. So if doing anything which takes your mind away from yourself, and you're able to think of the people around you, and think of the people who are dependent on you, I think it'll automatically be able to remove the burden of grief a little bit.
Wow. You know, that's a wonderful thing that you have said, though it might seem cruel to tell it immediately to a person who has lost, but that is actually the solution for firefighting. That is, take the focus away from oneself onto the others. And why I said it's wonderful is, this is exactly what Swami did also. And during the Ishwaramma Day celebrations in 2002, on the 6th of May, in the discourse when Swami was speaking, he spoke about the situation when he lost his bodily mother, that is Ishwaramma. At that moment, if we listen to Swami's discourse, we realize that this is exactly what he did. He took away the focus from himself onto the others, the devotees, the students, and what he did is really so inspiring, with the hope that we will be able to take a leaf or two from Swami's book of his story. Let us listen to this discourse clip from Bhagwan's Ishwaramma Day discourse on the 6th of May 2002.
Ami yokka jeevitamu,
our life
katta kadapadiki ikkadiki summer class vachindi.
Finally she came to summer class here.
Oka roju ikkada Kalyanapuram ani Gogineer varu undeetundi. Gogineeri అక్కడ పోయి నడుచుకొని వచ్చింది.
She went to their house.
పక్కన ఉంటుందా చూడండి, ఒక పెద్దది కట్టారు.
There is a big bungalow on the other side.
అక్కడికి నడుచుకొని పోయింది, తిరిగి నడుచుకొని వచ్చింది.
She walked up to that place and came back.
కాఫీ తాగింది, కూర్చుంది.
She drank coffee and sat down.
కూర్చొని sat down. ఏం స్వామి నాడు క్లాసెస్ అంతా ఇంకా జరగటం లేదే అనింది.
How is it Swami is not running the classes today?
జరుగుతాయి, కాలం కొద్దీ జరగాలి.
Swami said it will go according to the timetable.
Time bell అవుతుంది, నువ్వు యోచన పెట్టుకోవద్దు.
Don't worry about it. At the right time it will happen.
కూర్చుంది.
Sat down.
ఒక్కతూరి కేక వేసింది.
And he shouted once.
స్వామి 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 మూడు తూర్లు వేసింది.
Three times he shouted, Swami, Swami, Swami.
నేను వస్తున్నాను 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 నేను మూడు తూర్లు చెప్పాను.
స్వామి ఆన్సర్ 3 times, I am coming.
రండి త్వరగా అనింది.
Come quickly, she said.
దుమ్ముతూ వచ్చాను.
అండ్ స్వామి కేమ్ డౌన్.
వచ్చేటప్పటికి నా చేయి పట్టుకుంది.
అండ్ కట్ హోల్డ్ ఆఫ్ ది హ్యాండ్ ఆఫ్ స్వామి.
మీరు ఈ ప్రపంచాన్ని ఎంతైనా కూడా మంచి చేయగలరు.
యూ కెన్ హెల్ప్ ది వరల్డ్ టు ఎనీ ఎక్స్టెంట్.
ఈ ప్రపంచంలో ఉండేటువంటి పెద్దల కంటే పిల్లలు చాలా మంచి చేయాలి.
The children in this world should be helped more.
Vidyarthulu marchali.
The students should be transformed.
Vidyavantuluga cheyanakkarledu.
Need not give them education.
Vidyarthulu gunavantuluga marchali.
The students should become men of character.
Na rendu chethulu tana kanda daggara pettukundi pranam ichindi.
She held both the hands of Swami on her eyes and gave up her life.
Appudu దేహం వస్తుంటాది పోతుంటాది.
ది బాడీ కమ్స్ అండ్ గోస్.
పునరపి జననం పునరపి మరణం పునరపి జనని జఠరేశయనం వస్తుంటాయి పోతుంటాయి.
ది బాడీ కమ్స్ అండ్ గోస్.
దీనికి ఏమి ప్రయోజనం లేదు.
మనం
విచారించనక్కర్లేదు.
యూ నాట్ వరీ ఓవర్ ఇట్
అని చెప్పి డ్రైవర్ ని పిలిచాను.
స్వామి కాల్ ద డ్రైవర్.
పెద్ద వ్యాన్ తెప్పించి వ్యాన్ లో ఈమెను పెట్టి
అండ్ ది బాడీ వాస్ కెప్ట్ ఇన్ ద వ్యాన్.
ప్రశాంత్ నేను తీసుకుని పోవన్నా.
అండ్ స్వామి వాంటెడ్ దెమ్ టు టేక్ దట్ బాడీ టు ప్రశాంత్.
రామబ్రహ్మమును పంపించాను.
And Swami sent Ramabrahma.
Ramabrahmamu chaala manchi vaadu.
Ramabrahmam was a very good person.
Anta personal ga thanu choosi chesetunti vaadu.
He would do everything personally himself.
Kabatti athani pampinchanu.
Swami sent him.
Rendo dinamu Gokaka vacharu. Bhagavantam vacharu. Classulu levu annaru.
Next day Gokak and Bhagavantam came.
Same day
they came and told Swami,
enduku classulu levu annanu.
Swami asked, why don't have classes?
తల్లిగారు మరణించారు కదా.
ది మదర్ ఇషాంబ హ్యాస్ పాస్డ్ అవే.
మరణిస్తే మరణిస్తుంది. పిల్లలంతా మరణించారా? పిల్లలున్నారు.
లెట్ హర్ డై బట్ స్టూడెంట్స్ ఆర్ అలైవ్. వి షుడ్ రన్ ది క్లాసెస్.
క్లాసులు జరగాల్సిందే అన్నాను.
ది క్లాసెస్ షుడ్ బి రన్.
ఓ గోకాకు చాలా ఆశ్చర్యపడ్డాడు.
గోకాక్ వాజ్ అమేజ్డ్.
అనౌన్స్ చేశాడు.
ది అనౌన్స్డ్
క్లాసులు జరుగుతాయి.
ది క్లాసెస్ ఆర్ గోయింగ్ టు టేక్
ప్లేస్. క్లాసులు జరుగుతూ ఉంటున్నాయి.
ది క్లాసెస్ ఆర్ గోయింగ్ ఆన్.
ప్రతి దినము క్లాస్ ఫస్ట్ నేను పోవాలా.
And Swami should go to the class every day.
Vastado rado, pillanta bayapadutunnaru.
The students were wondering whether Swami would go there that day.
Nenu andulo praveshinchanu.
Swami entered the classroom.
Praveshinchetappudiki.
And Swami entered there.
Pillalandaru kantidarulu kaacharu.
The students shed tears.
స్వామి వస్తాడో లేదో అనుకున్నాము.
యూఆర్ అఫ్రైడ్ స్వామి మే నాట్ కమ్.
ఎందుకు ఇవన్నీ జనన మరణాలు జరుగుతూనే ఉంటాయి ప్రపంచంలో.
బర్త్ అండ్ డెత్ హ్యాపన్ ఇన్ దిస్ వరల్డ్.
పుట్టిన వాడు చావక తప్పడు, చచ్చిన వాడు పుట్టక తప్పదు.
ది పర్సన్ హూ ఇస్ బోర్న్ హ్యాస్ టు డై, వన్ హూ డైస్ హ్యాస్ టు బి బోర్న్
అని చెప్పి వాడితో మంగించి అంత క్లాసులు జరిపించాను.
ది క్లాసెస్ వర్ రన్ క్వైట్ వెల్.
ఆ విధంగా ప్రతి దానికుడును నేను తట్టుకుని నెట్టుకుని ముందుకు సాగటం చేతనే నా యొక్క కీర్తి గౌరవాలు పెరుగుతూ వచ్చేసేసినాయి.
బికాస్ స్వామి faces everything with courage and boldness, Swami's fame and name are growing.
ee vidhanga jarigindaniki evarkaina chesthe chaala idi bayapadtaru. Nenu avanta ledhu.
But if anything happens to other people, they may be frightened.
Ramabrahmam cheppanu ee chem cheyali ettatchi Swami tavaru chinte baagundi kada annadu.
Ramabrahmam prayed to Swami, you should come there to Uttaparthi.
Idanti prapancha sambandhamainatundi sambandhalu. Idi naaku sambandham ledhu.
It is only worldly relation. Really I have no relation.
Nenu ikkade chuchanu.
I have seen her.
ఇక్కడే నేను ఆశీర్వదించాను.
I have seen her.
మీరు అక్కడ పోయి పూజ చేసింది.
I have blessed her here. You can take her.
చెప్పినట్టుగా చేశాడు రామబ్రహ్మం.
రామబ్రహ్మ డిడ్.
ఆ విధంగా ప్రతి చిన్న విషయానికి ఆమె కూడా సునాయాసంగా మరణం.
And she had a very easy death.
కళ్యాణపురం నుంచి వచ్చింది.
She came back from that place.
ఇప్పుడు తినింది.
Ate her food.
కూర్చుంది.
Sat there.
ఆమె కొంచెం తాంబూలం వేసుకోవటం చాలా ఇష్టము.
అండ్ సో షీ లైక్ తాంబూలం.
మొట్టమొదటి తాంబూలం చాలా ఇష్టమే.
అర్లియర్ స్వామి వాజ్ ఆల్సో ఈటింగ్ పాన్.
ఒక రోగడితో తీసుకుని కొడుతూ ఉండేది.
అండ్ షీ వాజ్ క్రషింగ్ దట్ పాన్.
కొట్టి 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 నోట్లో వేసుకుని తింటూ ఉండాలి.
అండ్ షీ పుట్ ఇట్ ఇన్ అవర్ మౌత్ అండ్ వాజ్ ఈటింగ్ ఇట్.
చెప్పాను ఈ విధంగా జరిగిపోయింది సునాయాసం. ఇంతకంటే బ్రతికినందుకు ఏం కావాలి.
షీ హ్యాడ్ సచ్ ఏ గ్లోరియస్ డెత్.
యునో Prem, when we hear this discourse clip, when Swami is saying, so many other points come to mind, you know, as to how we do the firefighting. And one thing that is, you see, Swami, the way he conducted himself when this episode happened, he did his responsibilities towards his mother, at the same time towards the children who had gathered for the summer course. The beauty of Swami's life is that, you know, what high standards he sets for himself, he does not do the same for others. I remember the Onam in 2007. Mm-hmm. Right in front of my eyes, in the portico, in the veranda, as Swami entered on the wheelchair, Mr. G.K. Raman, you know, who was the convener for the Tamil Nadu Trust, Sathya Sai Trust in Tamil Nadu, he just collapsed and he passed away in the portico. When that happened, I remember that day morning, there were only bhajans, all the programs and everything were suspended or cancelled. It is so amazing that when it comes to others, Swami empathizes. He did not say that no problem, it's nothing, go on, everything should go on as it is. But when it came to himself, he didn't spare. If he had cancelled the whole summer course also, nobody would have said anything because he has lost his physical mother. So while he set very, very, very high ideal standards for himself, he was very, very empathetic and compassionate towards others and didn't do the same. That is one thing that comes out. The other thing that beautifully comes out, which I think we missed in one of the firefighting things, is to relive the memories. You know, today we have the audio medium, the photos, we have videos. It will definitely be comforting because if they say that sorrow, joy, all these are just illusions, then why not have a pleasurable illusion as well? Instead of thinking about having had that cathartic process of venting out the emotion, why take back the memories to that one single moment which is painful? Why not relive the happy memories? It's amazing, right? When you listen to Swami and he knows to the great detail. It was not as if one fine morning Ishwarama passed away. She was sitting, she was crushing the betel nut and how she called out. To such detail he remembers. Of course, he doesn't need an audio or visual medium. But possibly our memory requires that, and that could be another firefighting technique where we relive the good memories that we have had with the person through photos or through videos and enjoy those memories. Because, you know, it would have possibly happened that we might not have enjoyed those memories when we actually went through those. Today, now, that is what we are doing even with Swami's life, right? We go back and each and every episode, we are able to treasure and enjoy it so much more. Relive it and understand its significance even much more. Possibly that might not happen to that extent with, say, my brother or my sister or my mother, but definitely to some extent it can be done. So reliving that, again, as we said, all these are firefighting methods, because the ultimate fireproofing method when we come to is, as Swami said in the discourse, which comes from the conviction and wisdom that nothing is permanent.
Very true. In fact, as you were saying that, you know, we relive those memories, go back to those pictures and images and whatever is there.
Mm.
The idea behind it is actually to live in the present. It's not to go back to the past. As Swami says, past is past. Don't worry about the past. The idea of we suggesting this thing of reliving that past is, what's important is the present. Are you able to live happily in the present? Because all said and done, to find happiness and joy in the present moment is actually union with God. That's what Swami says. And whatever done, whatever situation we go through in life, whatever life throws at us, our ability to hold ourselves in harmony and to go through it till the point where you might not need to do something drastic to be in that situation of joy and peace. So this is actually a means of going to the past so that the present is stable. It's not to relive the past. And that is why, as Arvind said, it's a firefighting method. It is not like every time you go through, when you lose somebody who is very dear to you, it is like a ceremony that you have to go and start reliving the thing. If you're able to joyfully let go of that person, I think that's the best way forward. But in the absence of that, it is better to find some consolation through these means.
So dear listeners, till now we were speaking about what we call as the firefighting methods. And if I can quickly summarize, there are many, and I'm sure there are many we have missed out also, but from what we could gather is dutiful and proper performance of the rites towards the person who has passed away, and dutiful performance of everything that one has to do towards people who are living and dependent and our responsibility also. The next thing we thought was, yes, of course, we were saying about reliving via images, audios and videos and reliving those moments of joy, treasuring those moments with that individual. Another thing is to give a positive vent for the sorrow via things that the person who has left was passionate about, had as his hobby or was interested in or liked to do. So pursuing that on the person's behalf gives another vent. At the same time, being careful that our emotions, the way they come out, do not debilitate those who are living nearby, who depend on us. Because if today that was to happen and it were to scar, say, a child for life, it would not be something welcome, right? I remember someone speaking to me about how a person, there was a suicide in the family, and there was a 4-year-old child in the family who was actually not affected by the suicide.
Mm-hmm.
But the way the rest of the family members responded to that suicide in shock, horror and terror and, you know, that terrible kind of response, that has actually scarred the child for life. It's got a very, very, I don't want to go into details of that. But it shows that, see, you are missing out on an opportunity to do good to a person whom you love, whom you can do to, because of you being unable to do something to a person who has left.
Right.
So these are all the firefighting things that we discussed, and the best example, our dear Swami, we could hear in his own golden voice how he responded to an episode where he lost his mother. So, dear listeners, we now have to move on to the fireproofing part to ensure that if such things happen, we are not hit so hard. Just as here we had a physical component, an emotional component, and an intellectual component, even in the fireproofing part, we will have a physical, an emotional, and intellectual component. But I think we'll come to that after this little break. Here's this very profound and meaningful song. On the other side of the song, we will continue with this discussion.
सहायक नाही मात पिता सुत नारी भाई अंत सहायक नाही फिर क्यों भरता पाप का खेला रे फिर क्यों भरता पाप का खेला चला चली का खेला रे दिन का जग में मेला सब चला चली का खेला दो दिन का जग में मेला सब चला चली का खेला.
What a beautiful song by Saint Kabir. I think that naturally brings us to the next point or next section of this discussion. You know, we were talking about how you handle grief and how you have to deal with grief. But why should you deal with grief? Because most people in that moment feel that what is there to live for? And that is what brings us to the first point of discussion, the first thing which we will tell here. The idea is that, as Swami would say, life is larger than what we think is confined within this birth and death. I mean, each of us is actually going through a larger journey. That is why they use that word, that death is the dress of life, because this is just one small section of one momentary aspect of that eternal life we are leading, and it's a huge journey in which we are meeting some people for this small period called life, and we're moving on. So it is so unsettling and unnatural to get stuck in every moment, you know, every up and down which comes through this small journey called life. And that is why it's so important to actually look at the bigger picture and go beyond this, you know, Swami keeps saying, punarapi jananam, punarapi marnam. Every death and every obstacle should not derail you. And, you know, there's that beautiful Chinnakatha which Swami would say many times. It's the typical example of what we all do in our life, especially when you're talking about losing dear ones. You know, there is this man who is on the bank of a river. He's doing something. I think he's a woodcutter or something. And he sees that in the waters which is gushing, the river water, he finds something like a gold plate which is being washed by the waters. And it's so large and it's so sparkling, it catches his eye. And the moment he sees it, he jumps into the water trying to catch hold of that gold plate or silver plate or whatever it is. And you can imagine the current is so strong, he's not able to hold that object in one hand and swim, because the current also is quite heavy and that object also is quite heavy. He's not able to let go. He's not able, because that greed of wanting to hold on to that, is not able to let go of that. At the same time, he's not able to swim with that. So eventually, you know, the desire for his own life wins over, and he lets go of that object. And two, three people who are at the bank, seeing this whole scene, they jump into the water, they save the man, they pull him onto the bank. And after coming onto the bank, this man starts wailing. He says, "Oh, my gold plate is gone. Oh, my gold plate is gone. Oh, my gold plate is gone." And he's like he's wailing, shouting aloud and crying and shedding profuse tears. When somebody who was one of those people who saved him tries to tell him that, "When was that gold plate yours?" The gold plate came and it went. In between you jumped in and you held it for a few moments, and now you're saying, "It was mine, it was mine, it was mine. I lost something." It was never yours. It just came and it went. It was just for a moment that you met with that.
I remember a story that Bhagwan once narrated in Trai Brindavan. It was about, I forget her name, about a Muslim lady who used to always call her two sons as earrings. You know, her two earrings, she used to call them like that. And Swami went on to tell the story. Two, three variations he would tell. I'm just narrating one variant. She, one day, you know, her husband brings her two earrings. And she comes to her husband and says, "Today something has happened. Will you promise me that you will not get upset if I tell you what it is?" And he says, "What is it?" She says, "Those two earrings that you got and gave me, did you buy them for me?" He says, "No, no, actually it belongs to the neighbor. I just borrowed it from the neighbor because he said it looked good on you, so you can wear it as long as you wish." "No, no, because the neighbor came and asked back for them. And I gave it back." She says, "Okay, fine." She says, "You're sure? Nothing? No problem?" And Swami was saying that the husband says, "Yeah, absolutely no problem. See, the earrings were not ours. It was his. He gave it to us for some time. Now he wanted it back. You gave it back, so there's no problem." She says, "Okay." And then she leads him to the room and opens the door, and he sees both her, you know, both his sons there. And he's shattered. And then the wife is actually having, she's a saint, that's why Swami says, she says, "See, this is what it is. These were two jewels that God gave us for some time. And it was with us. Now when God asked back those jewels, why are you crying?" And Swami said that this is the wisdom that she imparted. All said and done, the sorrow that comes, Prem, is because of the attachment. I was just thinking on what this attachment is. It is like all of us seek love. All of us want love. We are addicted to love. Prem ke pyasi, they say. That is the reason why when a loved one goes away, we feel that love will not come. But just as the feeling that love will not come is the cause for sorrow, if we examine a little deeper, that can be the cause for a solution also. Because You know, we are attached to love. Love is like the water that is flowing in the tap. For some time it is coming from this tap. And I am thirsty for water. And when I hold on to the tap, it's because I am thirsting for the water. It's actually got nothing to do with the tap. It's that water that's coming there. And then the tap goes dry. And I suck at the tap and I'm saying, I'm thirsty, why is the water coming? And there somebody points out, there's another tap, you know, the water's coming there. No, I want it. Suddenly my need for water has got transformed into need for the tap. That is what I feel is the transformation of need for love to attachment. Swami says that all the love that you receive in your life is from God. It is just that it happens to come through your wife, through your mother, through your father, through your children, through your friend, through your brother. But it is the same divine love. So get attached to that love rather than the instrument of that love. I remember reading in the autobiography of a yogi where Paramahamsa Yogananda loses his mother at a tender age of 5 or 6. And that is when his heart cries out and pines out. He's been worshipping the divine mother. And that is when he receives a reply from the divine mother wherein she says that, my child, till today I wanted to give you love through that person. It was my love that you enjoyed through that whom you called as your mother. Today onwards, I will be giving it to you directly. And, you know, this is not some lore, this is not some folktale or some story. Possibly Paramahamsa Yogananda lived in a bygone era and it was different then. Recent memory, I remember a junior of mine, 2 years my junior in college.
Mm-hmm.
When he was in primary school, he lost his mother. And I remember a public discourse where Swami called him and, you know, put his head to his chest, because this boy was weeping, and full Swami's robe got drenched with his tears. And Swami said, you know, he has lost his mother. Today onwards, I am his mother. What Paramahamsa Yogananda received as a consolation, that is what he also received as consolation. If we are able to see with the eyes of wisdom, the Jnana Chakshu that Swami says about, we will realize that the love has not gone. The love has not changed. The love will definitely be there. It is just that the object or the instrument of that love through which we were receiving has changed. And it is definitely, you know, a death, that's what they say, smashana vairagya. Vairagya is detachment. A death is definitely a very, very powerful message to develop detachment. Because it is not some punishment that is meted out on some people. Everybody faces it. Nobody can escape it. Everybody has to face it. And everybody has to learn. Has to fireproof. Otherwise, there are bound to be more fires.
And the beauty of this thing is, you know, as you said, it's an eventuality. Nobody can escape. But when you're mentally prepared for it, when you're spiritually ready for it, what comes out of an eventuality can be nothing but wisdom. If you look at it, the entire Bhagavad Gita is actually a result of this particular fear. You know, when Arjuna sees all his uncles and gurus and relatives, and he sees that he is going to be the cause of their death. And the entire Bhagavad Gita is actually a result of that Krishna's desire to remove this delusion. He says that it is not their death which you're scared of. It is your attachment to their, you know, you thinking that so-and-so is my uncle, or so-and-so is my grandfather. It is that attachment which you are going to be hit at. So in that sense, if you see that every death which comes, of dear one, which comes, is actually a reminder that that attachment is still there. You are still not relating to that person as ideally you should be relating to that person. As you said, as a custodian. And you're talking of that, I'm reminded of what one of my classmates said. And that is why, you know, when Swami explains it and when Swami puts that thought in our head, it's a thought which will grow with us and which will prepare us for that moment when it happens. You know, this classmate of mine was saying that his elder brother was actually a very good Reiki healer. And his wife was carrying their first child. And apparently that mother was not healthy during the pregnancy. She went through some sickness because of which her hemoglobin level fell very drastically. And the doctors were treating that. So this boy's brother decided that he himself would do some kind of Reiki healing for that, for his wife. So he started doing a session. And invariably this person was a Swami's devotee. He would pray to Swami and kind of pray that Swami's healing happens through him. You know, that's all he would do. And when he was doing that session of healing for his wife with the child, and basically he was doing the healing for the child in the womb. And when he was doing that session, he goes into a kind of a trance and he sees a vision in front of him. Okay, in that vision he sees that his wife is lying on that bed and he is not standing there, but Swami is standing there. And Swami is having his hand over the womb of that, of his wife, and he sees blood oozing out of Swami's hands and entering the womb. Okay, and the moment he sees that vision, he knows that Swami has come to heal. So immediately after the session's over, he rushes his wife to the doctor. They check her blood and they find that she's absolutely normal. The child is absolutely healthy over that one session. So they're very happy and all that. And the mother of, you know, this friend of mine, she sat in the prayer hall and she was thanking Swami for this whole episode and, you know, how Swami had come and saved this grandchild of hers. And in her meditation, Swami comes and Swami tells her, now remember this, I have given you that child. It is not your child, I have given you that child, and when I take it back, no grieving. He said, always remember this, it is a child that I have entrusted to you, and he's not your child, he's my child, I'm giving him to you for a short period of time. You know, that short period of time could be even 80 years, 90 years, 100 years, but remember that he is not yours, he's been entrusted in your care.
Wow. You know, that definitely is a very, very powerful story to remember and inculcate this kind of detachment. You know, detachment doesn't mean being aloof, being indifferent. Swami's life shows us that, where a person can be completely involved yet detached. Involvement is a divine quality. Attachment is the human thing that brings on sorrow and grief. Detachment and involvement are not mutually exclusive, they are inclusive. You know, Prem, it might be like a little on the face, but you went through a personal tragedy like this, where it happened and you lost someone very, very close. I mean, I'm sure that our listeners will benefit to know your experience as to how you faced it. And of course, physically Swami was there, so all yours.
It's a very funny thing. That's why the contrast was so stark, and that is why I made that initial point where I said, you know, when you grieve, you're actually grieving for yourself. You're not grieving for that person. When it came to Swami, I think, as you're referring, it was what happened to my father. It was exactly a month after what happened when Swami left us. So the contrast was so obvious, and, you know, it was so easily comparable. See, when it happened, when Swami left us, we were all distraught. That was because we were actually feeling bad for ourselves. You know, Swami is always there. We were going to miss something which we had taken it for granted, Swami's darshan. We were missing something, you know, Swami's parshan, Swami's sambhashan, and we had our dreams so intertwined with that physical body. We were actually feeling bad for the future we thought we had lost. You know, the present we thought we had lost, because we were grieving for our own self. But for some reason, when it came to my father, you know, that is what I think a little bit of devotion can do to us. When we all went through that, it was so very strong in all our minds that what happens to him is going to be good for him. And we all, you know, in any situation, when you love somebody so much, you want what is best for that person, right? You know, that is when you are able to remove yourself from your own grief. You're able to remove yourself from your own pains when you're actually caring for the other person. So when you are actually caring for a loved person, you're all the time thinking what is best for him, what is best for her. And you're telling that, Swami, let what is best for that person happen. And when that eventuality is death, you feel that maybe that's the best thing for that person. And that kind of removes so much of your grief. You're so convinced that, Swami, I know that whatever you're going to do is going to be the best for me and for that person. And if you've chosen this, I mean, I have no problems with that. Of course, there is grief. You know, as you said, grief is an emotional thing. Grief will always be there. But in the back of your mind, you're absolutely convinced that what has happened is good for that person. And that can give you a stability which can even surprise you.
Really, Prem, it definitely surprised me, because I felt that you had a double whammy. In April, it is Swami. And after that, as you said, within a month, it's your father. And I was thinking that you should be a goner, actually. You should be an emotional wreck. But it was amazing. I don't think you took even a leave from office. You continued to do anything until and unless specifically told. I don't think any of us even noticed that you had undergone such a kind of a disastrous pain in your life. But it's really amazing, and I must frankly confess that it is very inspiring to see a living example of how Swami's teachings, Swami's love, devotion to Swami, faith to Swami can stand as a beautiful armor against all suffering. As they say, pain is destined. You can't escape it. What has to happen has to happen. How you meet it, that is what determines our pleasure or suffering. How we meet it. What we meet in life is destiny. How we meet it is self-effort. And really looking at the way you have taken this and the way you have done, it really inspires that if we hold on with Shraddha and Sabhuri to Swami, with faith and perseverance, definitely everything can be overcome and nothing is going to permanently scar or damage us.
It's a fact that much more is achieved by loving Swami than we can even realize. Because many of these things, you know, when we say devotion, when we talk of faith and all that, what it endows with us cannot be seen unless thrown in a situation. And many times it comes as a surprise to us. I'm reminded, I think, sometime back we played an interview which we had of one of our old students, Balaram Chandran. Now, he was talking of how he was very, very attached to his grandfather because he was the first grandchild in the family, and you always have that tradition where that grandchild is very, very close to the grandfather and the grandmother. So he was very attached to his grandfather, and eventually with great difficulty actually they came and joined Swami's college because that meant that you have to be far from your grandparents and all that. And he was saying that he and his brother were studying in Swami's school and college then. And during their exams, their grandfather fell sick. So the parents back home thought that let's not disturb these kids, let them go on with their studies. So the fact that their grandfather was ailing and was actually sinking was not told to them. And eventually by the time they finished the exams, I think their grandfather himself passed away. So now they had to bring these kids back home. And Balaram Chandran was telling that how all through his childhood, he actually had this fear of death. He was saying that, how will I confront death? Personal and that of those who are very dear to him. He said, how will I confront this? You know, the very thought of it would freeze him, and he never knew how he's going to deal with it. And he, every time it came, he would brush that thought aside. He said, no, Swami, I don't think I can deal with it. And when this happened, his father also knew about, you know, this thing, and he knew that how dear these kids were to their grandparents. So they sent one person from the family to go and pick up these the two boys and bring them back home.
Balaram Chandran and his brother.
And his brother, Ramakrishna. So these two boys were brought home, and you know, this person comes and breaks the news saying that your grandfather is no more. And to his surprise, and to the surprise of the relative who came to pick them up, there was absolutely no emotion on his face. Because he said the first thought was maybe that's the best thing for him. Swami has taken him. You know, the first thought was Swami has accepted him. You know, his life is over and Swami has accepted him. So he very coolly goes up to his younger brother's classroom, tells him that this is the situation, we have to go home. And he says the rest of the journey back home, these two boys were consoling this relative who came to pick them up.
Oh, he was supposed to console the two boys.
He was supposed to console, give courage. But these two boys were giving consolation to them. And he said they walked into the house, and the grandmother comes crying, and they tell the grandmother, don't worry. See, Swami says that we are not the body. Swami says that we are beyond all this. And he said that, you know, it was not rehearsed. It was not something which they were prepared for. But it is these situations that you realize that Swami has been preparing you without your knowledge. And that is why when you have faith in Swami, when you have devotion in Swami, it prepares you for much, much more than you even can conceive.
Amazing. Speaking about how one prepares, that is, fireproofs. One more point that came to mind is actually the answer to an interesting question. Professor Anil Kumar was once asked, I remember, sir, do you believe in life after death? Do you believe in life after death? I remember his reply, it's etched in my mind, you know, brilliant one-liner. Okay. He said, I don't know about life after death. I believe in life before death. You know, that was such a powerful statement because, you know, many times what happens is, I have seen some cases like that, where the person who is gone causes sorrow. As you said, there is no sorrow to the person who leaves. The sorrow is only to the people who are left behind on the earth. So, all the sorrow is personal. And one cause for the sorrow can also be guilt.
Right.
If you feel that, you know, when that person was there, when my grandfather was there, when my father was there, oh God, if only I had could have spent some more time with him. He wanted to just visit this place once. If at all I could go with him. Why did I give so much importance to my work? Why did I do this? You know, that guilt is there because you have not given your 100% to that relationship, to that person when he or she was there. And that is where this also comes in. You know, in preparation about giving importance and value, spending quality time. You know, we were saying later on, build up memories, watch audios, watch videos. I mean, you will be able to do that only if you have built up those memories, right? So to ensure that there is no guilt, in order to ensure that it is not there, live every moment of your life. We often hear people saying, live every moment of your life as if it's your last moment, because you never know whether tomorrow is there or not. Why not live every moment of your life as if it is the last moment with whomever you are meeting? Just as it's true, Prem, that tomorrow I might not be here to talk to you, so let me utilize this moment. It is also true that tomorrow you may not be here to talk to me. So if I interact with you, can I interact with you with this knowledge? Because this is not some imagination. This is not some fantasy. This is a truth that stares in our face every day. Tomorrow you might not be there. Tomorrow I might not be there. While I often inspire myself thinking that today might be my last day on earth, let me lead it properly, I often forget that it could also be the last day for everybody else whom I meet. Whether it's my father, my mother, my wife, my children, my grandparents, my friends. If we can keep that in mind, the way we behave, the way our priorities are arranged will automatically undergo such a change, so that when actually the fire happens, it is not that painful, it doesn't burn so much, because the guilt part would have gone.
Absolutely. I think it's giving what has to be given. As we said, you know, the physical expression of sorrow to be dealt with after the loss has happened is to do your duty. I think it's the same thing even before, in preparation. You have to do your duty every moment. I mean, if you feel that you've done what has to be done, this is true for anything in life. I think we're talking about death, and so in this context we're bringing it up. But I think life itself is to be led in such a way that at any moment when you look back, you have no regrets. You have nothing to point out and say that I could have done that differently, I should have done more of that, or I should have spent more time or given more of myself to somebody. I think that feeling should never be there. That will be the case if every moment you're doing what is supposed to be done, what is supposed to be given, giving importance to what needs to be given importance to.
You're speaking about living every moment as if it's one's last one. You know, I'm reminded of this episode of Mr. Nandedkar. Such a beautiful life, such a beautiful story. He lived in the Middle East. He came to know Swami in 1995. And he came to know Swami through bhajan singing, music, which were very close to his heart. He actually developed his faith, devotion and love for Swami because of his love for bhajans and playing the harmonium. He used to play the harmonium very well. Slowly, he became the most important harmonium player of that center there. In fact, they say that when there were Akhand bhajans, there were instances when Mr. Nandedkar would play the harmonium for the complete Akhand Bhajan, for 24 hours without taking a break. I mean, without food, sleep, anything. That was his love for Swami, that was his love for the harmonium. When he was asked as to why it is that he takes everything so seriously, I mean, even a small Samiti Bhajan, he would be there, put his best, sound amazing, play perfectly. When he was asked, he always used to say, see, you never know. What if this is my last ever bhajan? What if this is my last bhajan in front of Swami? So I want to give my best. And this was more like a dialogue, everyone, friend. This is more like a statement that he's making. And it was one day when he was singing, you know, he put the Shruti and started singing that bhajan, Parthishwari Jagat Janani. And as he's singing that bhajan, calling out to the mother, and everybody felt that there was something sublime and divine about that bhajan he was singing. Everybody's enjoying the bhajan. This is something in 2002 or 2003, I think, or 2004 maybe. As he's singing this bhajan, people are enjoying and they're hoping that this bhajan never ends because it's so beautiful. The bhajan comes to an end and, you know, at the end of the bhajan, he has to keep the key, the pitch for the next bhajan. But the harmonium just is trailing off. And when they look, Mr. Nandedkar has got a smile on his face and his face is on the harmonium. And you know, that is when it hit people that here was a person throughout life. He kept singing, saying that I have to sing this bhajan perfect because what if it's my last bhajan? And it indeed, a day came when it was his last bhajan. And that is the best possible way he could go. You know, they say that the entire life has to be spent in preparation for death. It is often said that when a person dies, the last moment thoughts are what determine his future. And there's a story of Ajamila who led a terrible life throughout, but while he was dying, he called out to his son Narayana, because of which he was saved. Well, that is a story given to show the power of the name of Lord Narayana. Swami says, you can't think of a shortcut like that. You can't think that I will face what has to be done when the death comes. And Swami gives his own example. He says that a person named four of his sons like that, Rama, Krishna, Govinda, Narayana. And he says that when he was dying, he called out, Rama, Krishna, Govinda, Narayana. And when they all actually came near his bedside, he said, you fools, if all of you are here, who is taking care of the shop? All his life he has spent in attachment to the shop. Don't think that just by naming your children like that, in the time of death, that attachment will be gone. So, the way Swami says, we realize that life is actually meant as a journey in preparation for death. Entire life is meant to be prepared for death. Because that is the end, that is the logical end. But this is where we can derive a little more meaning and say that preparation in life is not only for our death, but also the death of near and dear ones who mean a lot to us. How we face it, it also gives us an idea of how prepared we are, how grown spiritually we are.
You know, Arvind, this has been quite a discussion where people might ask us, you know, speaking about all the unholy things. I remember even in our families, it would a mention of somebody passing away or saying, even a grandmother who is 90 years old says that I don't know how long I'm going to be here. They would say, no, why are you saying inauspicious things? And here we are spending 1.5 hours of our discussion in Swami's own studio on this. I can't but recollect what a forward I got yesterday. I don't know if you've heard, it's called the Stockdale Paradox.
No.
Okay, it's a brilliant piece. It's a word coined after a US Marine. His name is Stockdale. I don't know what's his second or last name. He apparently was one of the prisoners of war who was captured by the Vietnamese army. And he was a prisoner of war for 7 years. And you can, needless to say, the travails which they went through in the 7 years, the tortures, unbearable. And he was one of those very few who went through the whole process and came back, and he came back and lived for many years in the US. Apparently many, many years later, there was a researcher who was doing a research on how certain businesses prevail. You know, where they go through difficult situations, they prevail. And those are the businesses which actually go from a good business to a great business. And in fact, he was doing a research on that. For that, he came and spoke to this Medin. He wanted to know how did he go past his most difficult situation in life. And that is when he made a very, very beautiful point. He said, before coming to how I survived, let me tell you that those who were the optimists in that group, none of them survived. You know, we often give so much importance to optimism and speaking the right thing and, you know, some of these things. He said, because these optimists were refusing to see what was in front of them. Were trying to overlook the pain which was in front of them. Were trying to, you know, do an ostrich. Trying to say that, no, nothing, everything is rosy, nothing will happen to us, and this Christmas will be out. He said, that optimism is actually going to ruin you. What is important is, you face the situation which is in front of you. You say that, yes, this is going to come, I cannot run away from this. And deal it with hope and optimism. Let not your optimism blind you to what is going to come to you.
Basically, let not optimism be an ephemeral, superficial kind of optimism.
Right, he said you have to acknowledge the intensity of the situation you're facing. And that is why it said, you know, you're living now, you're young, why are you talking about death? It's not that. Death is an eventuality everybody has to face. And if at that moment we are not prepared for it, you've wasted a lifetime's opportunity, because that is the only thing which is certain. You know, whether you're going to go to school, you're going to go to business school, or you're going to become a doctor, none of these are certain, but we are preparing so much for that. If there is one thing, when we are born, we can be sure that this is definitely going to come, it is this death. Why are we not preparing for it?
That is a wonderful and a really poignant point to ponder about. Prem, as you said, we have spoken for 1.5 hours. It's almost time to wrap up the discussion. But it is always good to allow Swami to have the last word, because when Swami says something, it makes a lot of meaning, much more than what you or me or anybody else can make. So dear listeners, we will be concluding this satsang with one audio clip, again taken from that same discourse, the 6th of May 2002 Ishwaramandi discourse. In fact, Swami began his discourse with these words that day. So we'll be concluding with that. We cannot claim to have had a very, very comprehensive discussion on death, because each one of us is works in progress, and we speak from what we have understood, what we have assimilated, what we have experienced. We are sure that there'll be so much more thoughts, so many more feelings, and so many more ways in which we can come out of this grief of loss of a beloved one. You can definitely write in your thoughts and feelings to us via listener@radiosci.org. That's our address, listener@radiosci.org. We will await your letters, and if need be, take this discussion into another week sometime later also. So we would like to conclude by offering our gratitude at Swami's lotus feet, and with this discourse clip.
Prema Swarupular,
embodiments of divine love.
Yatrusyam tannasyam. Ee charma chachulaku gocharincheetuvanti samasta padarthamulu samasta roopamulu kudanu oka naatiki antadhanam avutuntayi.
All that we see through the physical eyes, maybe it is the materials, maybe they are the persons, one day or the other, they are bound to vanish.
ఈ చర్మ చిచ్చువులు కేవలం మానవులకు మాత్రమే కాదు పశుపక్షి మృగాదులకు కూడాను ఈ చర్మ చిచ్చువులు ఉంటున్నవి.
The physical eyes are not only there for man, but even birds and animals have these physical eyes.
క్రిమి కీటకాదులకు కూడాను ఈ చర్మ చిచ్చువులు ఉంటున్నవి.
Even worms and insects have these physical eyes.
కానీ ఉండి ప్రయోజనం ఏమిటి?
But what is the use of these eyes?
నిత్య సత్యమైన దృశ్యములను తాను చూడటం లేదు.
These physical eyes cannot see the eternal and the truthful sights and the visions.
అనిత్యం, అశాశ్వతం, అసత్యమైనటువంటి దృశ్యములనే చూస్తున్నవి ఈ నేత్రములు.
These eyes sees only the temporary forms which are not the truth, which are untruthful.
ప్రపంచమంతయి కూడాను ఈ విధమైనటువంటి చర్యలతోనే మానవ జీవితమును ముగించుచున్నవి.
In the world we see today that men complete their lives only through such physical activities.
కానీ నిత్య సత్యమైనటువంటి ఒక దృశ్యము జ్ఞానము మాత్రమే.
But what is true and eternal is only jnana or wisdom.
అట్టి జ్ఞాన చచ్చువును కలిగినటువంటి వాడే నిజమైన మానవుడు.
A person who has true wisdom eyes is truly the man.
కనుక మానవుడు నేటికైనను తన చచ్చువులను అంతర్ముఖం గావించుకొని ఆత్మతత్వాన్ని కొంతవరకును అర్థం చేసుకోవటం అత్యవసరం.
Therefore, it is necessary that man turns his vision inward and tries to recognize and experience the atmic principle.
Mana drishtini antarmukham gavinchukunnappude manaku aatmatattvam gocharam avutundi.
When we
bahirmukhamlo undinanta varaku kudanu ee bahirdrishtiye bahir prapanchame bhautikamainatvanti lokame.
Only when we turn our vision inward we can experience the atma. But as long as we see outside, we see only the temporary world.
Sai Ram, you just heard an episode of our radio program, Afternoon Satsang. This is a segment of Radio Sai's Thursday Live, hosted by Prem and Arvind from Team Radio Sai at 12:30 p.m. Indian Standard Time on Thursdays, only on Asia Stream of Radio Sai Global Harmony. Today's episode was first broadcast live on 2nd April 2015. Dear listeners, we hope you like this program. As always, you can send us your feedback to listener@radiosai.org. Thank you and loving Sai Ram from Prashanthi Nilayam.